You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we've returned here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and back with us here today for the first time ever in video form, I have to say, is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, you know, we've been doing this for a long time together, but this is kind of a milestone, our first ever video episode. And I think it's a good time to be getting this kicked off as the Ravens come out with that incredible 36-35 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. How are you doing today?
Doing quite well, doing fantastic. Get to look at your beautiful face for the first time in, as you said, 2 years. Like long-lost pen pals have never seen each other, so it's a lot of fun to be getting some video content in on Locked On. I'm excited for the show to keep progressing and can't be doing better. It was a tiring night, a long night. Went to the game, but it was an outstanding night. It was a tired day, but a happy day. Lots of smiles in the exhaustion. It was a fantastic win. The Baltimore Ravens shock the Kansas City Chiefs, and maybe Las Vegas knows a little bit more than we do, as they only had the Ravens as 3.5-point underdogs in this game. I don't think anybody was taking the Ravens to cover that, and Vegas knows best. Baltimore Ravens end up doing it, doing the darn thing, nixing the narratives, all that good stuff. So I'm doing fantastic, ready to talk some Ravens football, and thank you so much for having me on again, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm excited to do this in video form with you too. And the game on Sunday night, Spencer, was just, I mean, it was magical. This team, they get down early, the pick six that Lamar Jackson throws on that first possession, not his fault. You know, Sammy Watkins slips, he puts the ball in a place he thinks Watkins can get it, but he just can't. He's fallen to the ground. So Tyrann Mathieu picks it off, returns it to the house for a touchdown. The second pick that he threw, though, not his best decision. Triple coverage, you know, a pretty poorly timed throw by him, but it's just a testament to this team and how resilient they are. They got down against an offense in Kansas City that, one, is just deadly in general, but two, this is a team that the Ravens hadn't beaten in 3 seasons. This was their first win in 4 seasons against this team. So they could have easily, you know, they see the injuries and they see this Kansas City team up, you know, by a score here, and they could say, you know what, this just isn't it for us. But that's not what this Ravens team does, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I was very impressed to see the Ravens, one, average 6.1 yards per carry, but two, not move away from that when they got down. I thought Greg Roman did a really good job in that regard. The pass game looked pretty good as well for the most part. So Spencer, how impressed were you with this offensive performance, especially considering the start that the Ravens offense got off to?
Extremely impressed, and considering the perseverance, considering the hole that Lamar Jackson dug himself and dug the Ravens with a pick six, you know, that wasn't necessarily his fault, as you mentioned, at all, but the second one was dreadful in the red zone, cost the Ravens at least 3 points, if not more, into Kansas City territory. Being unable to get anything out of that drive after the pick six was really unfortunate, and I don't think we've seen Lamar Jackson really able to make a comeback in terms of confidence in a single game like that. And the irony, the sugarcoat on top, is a narrative that, you know, classic. The Ravens, they run, like to run the ball. If you get a 2-score lead on them early, then you're going to be able to put them away. Well, the Chiefs couldn't do that. They couldn't put them away. So I thought that the Ravens did an outstanding job of keeping at it. I thought Greg Roman mixed up his play calls well. I thought that he diversified his run game. Lamar Jackson was electric on the ground. He was precise through the air, and especially in the second half, doing what needed to be done, moving the chains, getting first downs, all that good stuff. And it was an outstanding performance overall. The ragtag offensive line, 3 new starters from last week, able to contribute, able to make plays and come in and really get it done. So I overall thought that it was a really encouraging, strong performance from the Ravens offensive line and from Lamar Jackson. Marquise Brown makes plays left and right, getting yards after the catch, way more than we've seen, reminiscent of what he did at Oklahoma a couple of years ago. So looking like the real Hollywood primetime Jet Brown in this game, and having a nice complimentary outside receiver like Sammy Watkins, he can go move the chains a couple times, make some nice catches, was a really strong thing for this offense. And the Ravens, you know, kept at it and surgically drove methodically down the field. They have an 8-minute drive at the end of the game that ends up, taking most of the clock away, putting the defense back on the field and telling them to win the game, and they ultimately do it. So the offense did everything they needed to and put up 36 points, which I kind of established as the magic number for the Ravens in this situation, because, you know, if you want to beat the Chiefs, you're going to have to put up a lot of points. The Ravens did that.
Yeah, they certainly did, and you did put that out there. You know, people call Lamar Jackson Houdini, but I think it might be you who's actually Houdini in that regard. But Spencer,
just every once in a while.
Yeah, right. Just every, you know, you hit on them sometimes, you miss on them other times. I've been in that boat for sure. But, you know, I've talked about efficiencies a lot in the Ravens. Two areas where I was very impressed with them on Sunday night was in the red zone and also on third down. The Ravens on third down in week one really struggled against the Raiders. They went 3 of 12. In week two, they go 6 of 11. And it was impressive to me to kind of have that bounce back performance there in the red zone. I think a lot of people know that it's pretty impossible to beat the Chiefs if you kick field goals in the red zone, especially with that offense with Patrick Mahomes and company. The Ravens go 4 for 4, score 4 touchdowns in the red zone. So, Spencer, those two things in particular, obviously third down, the red zone, it's very important. But the Ravens didn't just, you know, run the football in those situations. They passed the football really effectively, and it all goes back to the narratives of the Ravens. If they don't get into those third and shorts, or if they don't get into those second and shorts, they won't be able to move the chains. So what did you see out of this offense, both in the red zone and on third down in this one?
Well, you see the offense able to establish themselves on first down and put themselves in favorable situations so that they are able to keep a neutral script in terms of run pass. You're seeing them extend plays. You're seeing the offensive line not jump or put themselves in huge holes, not, you know, having penalties and false starts and things that can be drive killers. So instead, you're seeing a very methodical team that was able to confidently get the ball out on time, running backs hitting the right holes, linemen executing. It just comes down to execution and wanting it more on third down, wanting it more in the red zone, and wanting it more being executing more, not trying to do too much. Lamar Jackson not trying to be too much of a hero and putting himself in bad positions. That's what we saw last year against the Chiefs late in that game. Lamar takes 2 sacks running out of a clean pocket. You didn't need to run out of a pocket. He didn't do that in this game. He did make mistakes early on, but made up for them tenfold throughout this game. And, you know, it kind of is an interesting argument now. You're seeing Ravens team with Latavius Murray signed 8 days ago, as well as Tyson Williams. They're running the ball damn well. And, you know, you're looking at these guys thinking, man, we thought they were really going to miss Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. And do they? Yeah, sure they do. But looking like, you know, the scheme and Lamar Jackson might have a little bit more to do with that run game than people even fully realized, which has always been, you know, talked about. But it might be even greater than we anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And I'm impressed with how the Ravens pivoted, because obviously Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, you know, throw Justice Hill in there. Those are pretty big losses. But I think what the Ravens were able to do in signing Murray, getting Devonta Freeman in there, Le'Veon Bell in there as well, and having Tyson Williams, that's a pretty good group, all things considered. You know, the Ravens losing their 3 guys from last season in a pretty short amount of time right before the season starts. But Spencer, kind of an interesting thought that I've had recently in these past couple of hours, I'd say, is the fact that the Ravens offensive line, you mentioned it, they performed well. You know, they were kind of strung together. They've already had to do some shuffling. And also the Ravens have had to work with a couple injuries at the wide receiver position with Rashad Bateman, Miles Boykin, and those guys. But how do you see this Ravens offense shaking out? And this is more of like a for the future question, but when or if Ronnie Stanley comes back, you know, Tyree Phillips, however long his injury is, Bateman, Boykin, how do you see kind of the Ravens offense distributing not only the football, but the spots on the actual starting offensive line? Because they have a lot of talent, it seems like, right now. It's just a matter of who goes where.
Right. It's a difficult situation. I think there's several variables, especially with Alejandro Villanueva, who clearly is more comfortable on the left side. His mechanics are built that way. He's been playing there for 7 years. So the good part of that is that you don't need to rush Ronnie Stanley back, your $100 million left tackle. He can fully explore rehab or surgery if needed, if that's the case. Things like that. So it gives them a little more reassurance. You see Patrick McCary come out. Well, I thought he's always looked better on the right side as opposed to the left side. So you're seeing him turn in a solid game against a tough team that has a couple explosive edge rushers in Frank Clark and Chris Jones and play well enough where you think, wow, okay, well, now you're going to see the Ravens head to Detroit, a team that they should probably run train on. You're going to see them go against the Broncos team then that does have really dominant edge rushers. So, you know, a pretty easy matchup to get a little bit more flavor out of McCary and Villanueva and evaluate before you have another tough test in those Broncos. So the Ravens have a little bit of time right now, a little bit more than they expected to make some of these decisions and really look at the long-term sustainability versus the immediate need. And if you're 0-2 right now, you have an immediate need. You don't have many more, you know, you're going to have to go 10-5 then to be able to have a, you know, a double digit season that looks like it can make the playoffs. So it's a really difficult situation if the Ravens lose this game. It's a really difficult situation if Patrick McCary doesn't play well. There's levels to it in many different ways. So for the Ravens to be able to do what they did, their offensive line to be able to look the way they did was really encouraging. And I think it is a testament to the quarterback. I think it's a testament to the play caller. I think it's a testament to guys like Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews and Sammy Watkins who are making plays regardless of who is on the offensive line. So it's encouraging for the near future as well as, you know, looking towards November, December, as long as these guys are able to stay healthy.
Right, and I think we saw exactly what having someone who's not 100% out there, what that means for a team. You know, Ronnie Stanley out there in week one, clearly not at 100%, not really back to what people expect out of him. And look, it takes time for sure, but I do think at the end of the day, the Ravens need to have somebody who is healthy out there because the drop-off in talent when Stanley isn't 100%, you know, you can see that in his play. So getting him back to what I think a lot of people know he can become is really important. But finally here, Spencer, before we actually do head into our first break, the play calling by Greg Roman I thought was a lot better than I think people expected out of him in this game. You know, people, there is the crowd that is ready for Greg Roman to just, you know, get out of Baltimore. But I thought he did a decently good job in this one. So, Spencer, what did you see out of Greg Roman and his play calling in this game against Kansas City?
Well, he used less screens than I expected. The Ravens only threw one, if I recall correctly. And I thought that he did a great job utilizing play action. The Ravens used play action on almost a 50% split. And they had a plan against the blitz. They were very prepared for the Chiefs' blitz. The Chiefs in 2019 didn't blitz the Ravens at all. Steve Spagnuolo elected not to. In 2020, the Chiefs blitzed the Ravens on half their dropbacks. And they stymied the Ravens when they blitzed them. They were much better prepared for the blitz. I think they've seen both sides of Steve Spagnuolo's attack, the blitz versus not blitzing. And I thought that they picked them up really well. I think that Spagnuolo thought he was going to be able to get free rushers against the ragtag offensive line that, you know, might miss some assignments and miss some things the way that they did in Las Vegas, but they didn't. So I think that speaks volumes. And I think that he did a great job setting Lamar Jackson up for success, spreading the field out a little bit more. They varied using some tight formations as well as some really spread out formations, getting Marquise Brown involved in the slot. The RPO slant, you know, I love to see the RPOs out of this offense. I think they severely underuse RPOs in this offense. It's been one of the faults that I've had of Greg Roman. Last week, you would have liked to see more. And guess what? Marquise Brown generates an explosive play after the catch on one because they're so worried about the run. And when they're so worried about the run, linebackers are going to be voiding. They're going to be filling. And then you're going to have space like that for a guy like primetime Jet Hollywood Brown to go make a play. So I really like the RPOs. I really like the way that they were utilizing the option game down by the goal line and using some jumbo and heavy sets and really daring the Chiefs to, you know, stop them. Latavius Murray on some downhill concepts. And I thought he did a good job utilizing Mark Andrews as a blocker who wasn't known at all to have any sort of prowess as a blocker coming out of Oklahoma. If you recall watching him be drafted live, they say that he's essentially a big wide receiver. Well, I disagree with that at this current point in time. I think Mark Andrews has turned into a really solid, consistent blocker who has a technically refined game as a blocker, as well as a little bit of a mean streak to him. I think he's, you know, able to kind of get after guys and finish plays and do that. And you need a dog right now. You've got Ricard in there, but you're lacking Nick Boyle. And Nick Boyle being a dog, being a finisher, is something that the Ravens have sorely missed. And I think Mark Andrews is not necessarily taking that torch. You're just waiting for Nick Boyle to come back and be a third dog. And suddenly you've got three guys that can be a plus in the run game for you like that. It's going to help out your offensive line. It's going to help out in pass pro when you need them to, and ultimately provide your team with some really strong foundations in various sets and formations and play calls and things like play action. So I thought that Greg Roman did a nice job utilizing all of it.
Yeah, I thought it was a very diverse game plan from Greg Roman. So hopefully we'll continue to see more of that. And, you know, his play calling, it was expected it was going to evolve this year. And I think what we saw against the Chiefs is a really good stepping stone for him to continue to grow this offense, especially with the talent that it does have. But we're going to head into our first break. And when we get back, we'll be talking about the defensive side of the ball for the Ravens. So stay tuned for that. But we're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on to start another football season. As always, Bet Online is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline AG continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. Don't forget to use promo code NFL100. From football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we return here with our second segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, this Ravens defense, definitely an up and down performance. I mean, they didn't play particularly well, but again, who does for the most part against this Kansas City offense? But it seemed like they were definitely struggling in some areas. For one, surprisingly, they did not sack Patrick Mahomes in this game and still won, which I think surprised a couple of people, especially because throughout the entire game, they didn't really get a ton of pressure. There were a few plays, you know, what Afe Owe had a nice pressure play where Mahomes kind of stepped up on that interception that he threw to Tavon Young, his first in September. The Ravens struggled with tackling, though. That was pretty evident on the Travis Kelce huge touchdown run, which honestly should have been like a 6-yard gain to begin with. The Ravens also rough game for Patrick Queen, for Malik Harrison. Now, I will say not as bad as their game last year against Kansas City. You know, they definitely have taken steps from there, and it's all a learning process. We have to, I think, remember it's those guys' second seasons at the NFL level. But I think people were expecting them to take more of a step up than we did see. So what were your overall impressions of this Ravens defense that, you know, didn't perform overly well throughout the entire game, but did step up in the clutch when it mattered?
Really, you nailed all of it. The missed tackles were killer. Patrick Queen had a terrible day in terms of missed tackles. I thought that coverage was generally strong from what I saw. Going to have to go back and check the tape on that. But bringing guys down after the catch, getting guys down was the issue. Marlon Humphrey lets up a touchdown in single coverage for the second consecutive week, which is, you know, I don't want to say concerning necessarily, but it's a little disheartening to see. You know, there might have been a little bit more to do with it, with what was going on in the back end, but it did appear he was in single coverage, and Mahomes able to take advantage of him. So that was not a fun sight, but Anthony Averett had a couple of nice reps. They did essentially make everyone other than Tyreek Hill beat them. They took Tyreek Hill out of the game. Tyreek Hill didn't seem to have the same juice that he usually has as well. He's a little dinged up, or maybe he just didn't have the energy, but it was a unique game plan. They just wanted to remove Tyreek Hill from the game. They let Travis Kelce beat them. They let Pringle beat them. They let Hardman beat them. You know, they let their backs get involved in the passing game just a little bit. And it was interesting to see the ability to truly take Tyreek Hill out of the game. And that somewhat made the Chiefs mortal, especially in the second half. And looking at the score, you say, oh, well, 35 points. Well, they held the Chiefs under 30 on the defensive side of the football. So did they get crushed? No, they didn't. And at the end of the day, Odafe Away comes out, had an incredible day against the run, was consistently in the backfield. Justin Madubuike makes a huge tackle for loss that flips the script there, takes the threat of the run away. And those two young players up front, I thought, did some interesting things. Calais Campbell seemed to really have a nice, consistent, steady game, executing well. And they hit Patrick Mahomes a couple times, but to go beat the Chiefs and hold their offense under 30 points and, you know, kind of get off the field there at the end of the game and turn the ball over without sacking him is pretty nuts to think about, pretty rare to think, you know, what's the formula to beat the Chiefs? So run the ball, get pressure with your front four. Well, they didn't get pressure, but they did make Mahomes step up. They didn't allow him to break the pocket, so they forced him to play a more vertical game in that sense athletically. And, you know, it had success at times for sure, but in the end of the day, they really kept the Chiefs in check in the second half of that game and did what they needed to do. So was it a great day for the Ravens defense? No. But as you said, Kevin, Kansas City Chiefs make a lot of defenses look bad. And did they win against Baltimore many times? Yes. But on third down, Ravens did a great job, held the Chiefs to 1-for-6. They you know, made some huge stops on third down, huge pass breakup by Anthony Averett on third down against Tyreek Hill in single coverage. So thought he had a pretty decent day. Thought Chuck Clark had a decent game as well. So this defense, work in progress right now. You know, Marcus Peters goes down. Some guys are younger, as you mentioned, still. There's not a ton of new faces, but there are a few out there. Brandon Stevens, I thought, started getting subbed out, it looked like, for Geno Stone towards the end of the game. So curious to go back and see what that might have been and how Geno Stone performed, because I didn't really see a ton just in terms of what happened on the back end. But Ravens did what they needed to do on defense.
Yeah, they did. They came out with the win, and that's the most important part. You know, Deshaun Elliott leaves this game with a concussion. Brandon Williams leaves with a neck issue. Calais Campbell is kind of in and out, and Jimmy Smith was not active for this one. So the Ravens are kind of putting the pieces together. You mentioned Marcus Peters being out for the year. It's a pretty big loss. I think they're still trying to adjust to it. Anthony Averett, I thought, again, another phenomenal game. I think he's going to get paid when he's a free agent this offseason. The Ravens are going to have to either put together an offer for him or just see him walk, because he's going to be, I think, a hot commodity on the free agent market. But someone, obviously, and you mentioned Spencer, one of the heroes of this game was Odafe Owe. And Owe was someone coming out of Penn State. You know, you see the no sacks during his last year. A lot of people held that against him and said, you know, how can you take a guy with the 31st overall pick that couldn't put up college production in the sack department? But it obviously goes a lot deeper than that. You see the athletic traits. You see the potential. He hasn't been playing football for that long. You know, honestly, I wasn't expecting the type of impact that Owe has had so far, but this is what I expected him to be for the Ravens defense down the line. It just happened a lot earlier than I expected. He's shown incredible athletic ability, good game sense. You know, he hones in on that football. The speed is obviously there. It's evident. How impressed have you been with Odafe Owe through 2 weeks based off of what you were expecting out of him in the early parts of the year?
Well, I thought that I had pretty high expectations of what he could do in the run game, and a lot of people wanted to throw that project tag on him, that developmental tag on him, and why are you going to take a player like that in the first round? Well, it's because he's actually a high-level run defender, and you saw that at Penn State consistently. He's able to close out. He's able to lock out. He has length. He has strength. He has speed. He has quickness. He's a good tackler in the open field from what we've seen. So I think that he is in a great place in terms of being a run defender. In terms of the pass rush, he sticks with it. And, you know, we've seen him able to string some things together. He has a big sack against the Raiders last week, which did show off his ability to kind of actually use some tools, like being able to swipe and being able to rip and being able to spin all in one play. So watching Odafe Owe, able to be relentless as a pass rusher, not take himself out of plays. He's playing like a veteran. He's not playing like a rookie. He's not making a lot of mistakes right now. So I was anticipating a little bit maybe more of an up and down year, kind of like maybe what we saw out of Patrick Queen last year, and that has not been the case. He has been rock steady. He's been consistent. Is he, you know, lighting the world on fire as a pass rusher? No, but he does end up hustling. He gets delayed, ends up hitting Mahomes. Mahomes makes a terrible decision to flick the ball while he's getting, you know, hit into kind of double coverage there, just right underneath for a very minimal gain on third down, and generates a turnover. So he's, you know, closing out. He's finishing. That's what I pegged him as a finisher, as a guy that can hunt, as a guy that can go end plays and go make plays to get Ravens off the field. And that's what we've seen out of him so far.
Yeah, I've been so impressed with him, Spencer. And honestly, same thing with Anthony Averett. And that's where I want to go with this last question before we do head in to our final break. I mean, Averett has stepped into a big role before. He got a lot of playing time, at least before his injury last season. And he played pretty well. I think he got injured in the, I think it was the Eagles game. I think he broke his collarbone and he was out for a couple weeks, couple months. He played well before that. And now he's entering a role where Marcus Peters, you know, is no longer available this season. Jimmy Smith has been out. So he has been taking on a huge role and he's performed really, really well. And I think that translated over to Kansas City where you saw him, you know, the viral clip of him running stride for stride with Tyreek Hill on that out route. You know, it's stuff like that where you look at Anthony Averett, and I've at least been very impressed with him. What did you see out of him, not only in this game against Kansas City, but so far, you know, even heading back to week one?
Yeah, Anthony Averett is a technically refined man cornerback, and he's a good finisher. He's able to make plays on the ball a little bit better. It seemed like he struggled to finish reps in the early part of his career. He struggled to play the ball. He would be in the right place. He would be in phase, and then wouldn't be able to make a play on the ball. I think that that's changed a little bit, and I also think that he's an underrated tackler. I think he's a guy that missed a couple tackles in this game, but I like the physicality he brings. I like his hustle. He knows he's a 4-3 guy, and he runs like it to go end plays, to go, you know, drag down an explosive gain at the end of the play. So I think Anthony Averett is still going to be putting finishing touches in terms of learning as a corner, but I think he's a rock-steady number two cornerback right now. You heard Wink Martindale say he has all-pro potential, and I think he's a guy that, you know, could maybe turn in a Pro Bowl season. He's not lighting the world on fire, but you see reps like him just locking up Tyreek Hill one-on-one, and it's quite encouraging. So I think Anthony Averett is in a good place. I think the Ravens with Humphrey and Averett are in a good place with their outside cornerbacks.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, people definitely were expecting, you know, the drop-off of not having Marcus Peters there. I think his loss has definitely been felt. But I think Averett is one of the better options that they could have had there in that situation, especially with Jimmy Smith being out and Chris Westry now not available, at least for a couple weeks. And I think this team, the depth in the secondary, you know, we've talked about it here before, Spencer. They start with like 10 million corners and they end the year with two. But so far, Humphrey and Averett, they're a solid 1-2 duo for sure. But we are going to head into our final break now. And when we get back, we'll be talking about what's next for this Baltimore Ravens team. So stay tuned for that. But This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Line drive from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning aims by all the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers online for over 20 years. They have everything you need from brake parts, tail lamps, and even new carpet. Go to rockauto.com right now and tailor parts available for your car or truck. Right locked on in the How'd You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. And does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another you stream your favorite shows on, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friends logging for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle and a great way to finally get your TV together. And it's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings you live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. And we are back with our final segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allshaker still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, this team, very impressive. You know, they beat Kansas City after that heartbreaker against the Raiders. You know, this team could easily be 2-0. They could easily be 0-2. It's a matter of just a couple plays in each game. But they are 1-1, as is the rest of the AFC North. And now the Ravens have, you know, I'd say two pretty winnable games against both the Lions and the Broncos. Now, that does not mean they're guaranteed to win it. You know, you can never underestimate. And the Ravens have had troubles in the past, not necessarily recently for the most part, but in the past playing down to opponents that they usually should be able to beat. So, Spencer, heading in to this game in week three against Detroit, it's a game where you saw Jared Goff almost lead that Lions team to a comeback against the 49ers in week one. As we record this, they're playing the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football in week two. What's your overall assessment of this Detroit Lions team and both their strengths and weaknesses as they pertain to the Ravens and what their roster is looking like right now?
Well, this Lions team does a good job utilizing their two backs, Jamal Williams and DeAndre Swift, offensively. I think they have a very gritty offensive line. They're able to, you know, utilize TJ Hockenson, who's a damn good blocker, as well as a strong receiver, but they really don't have weapons on the perimeter that make you fear them at all, and that's a dangerous recipe for a Ravens team that likes to blitz DBs traditionally. So I think that this offense is an offense in Detroit that is anemic. You know, they put up some points against the 49ers, but I don't anticipate that being the case tonight. I don't anticipate that being the case next week. This Ravens defense comes off of back-to-back games, allowing over 30 points. Well, technically, the Chiefs were, you know, not 30 because of the pick six, but, you know, letting up a lot of touchdowns, a lot of scores. First time in the John Harbaugh era that back-to-back opponents to start the season have scored 30 points. And I think that the missed tackles are going to bother them. And I feel bad for this Detroit Lions offense. I think they're going to see an absolute demon of a Ravens defense where, for, you know, a young, not uber-talented offense in Detroit, I think, is going to have a little bit of a defense that wants to make a statement and go out and prove to themselves that they can be an elite unit. And so I think that's going to be ugly. On the other side of the football, they lack a true secondary that can make defenses or make offenses fear throwing the ball over top. They lack a secondary that can consistently manage to corral passing concepts, two-man and three-man route concepts. And overall, I don't think this is a generally strong Lions defense. I think that they'll, you know, hustle. They'll make all the Dan Campbell plays you want them to. But at the end of the day, they just don't have the talent right now. I don't think that being in week two, you know, they lose Jeff Okuda, who wasn't playing at a high level anyway. And the secondary is a little bit beat up right now. So I don't think this Detroit Lions team is one that's going to strike fear into the Baltimore Ravens. They're also going to be on a short week, albeit they will be at home. But the Ravens will have a day advantage on them. And I think that this team travels well. I think Lamar Jackson travels extremely well. I think he plays well in domes, which is an underrated aspect. I think the man can fly when he's on the turf a little bit more. So I think this is going to be a rough, rough, rough day for the Detroit Lions coming off of this big Monday night game.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a decently big win for this Ravens team too, Spencer. And actually, former Ravens legend Michael Brockers will be on the field for the Detroit Lions because he is now in that uniform. But Spencer, this is a game where I think the Ravens could see a couple of their guys who maybe haven't been performing as well as they would have hoped to get them started a little bit, kind of spark a fire. Who are some players, both, you know, you can talk about offense, talk about defense, who are some guys who you haven't really seen a lot out of, who you'd like to see more out of from week three on?
I think Josh Oliver is a guy you can get involved in this game.
and he had a couple nice plays against the Chiefs, but he hasn't had super high usage yet. I think you can kind of rely on him a little bit more, especially if the Ravens are able to establish a lead. You can take Mark Andrews out of the game, let him rest up a little bit after two pretty intense games. A guy that you really need to be fresh is Mark Andrews in this offense, $50 million man. So I think he's an interesting one. And then, of course, the ancillary receivers, Tylan Wallace, James Proche, and Devin Duvernay. You're going to want to get them the ball, put the ball in their hands, see what they can do with it. As well as, let Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray get a little bit more run, especially Devontae Freeman, who had a really nice run, a key, huge run in this game, getting the Ravens down to the red zone. So I think those are all definitely aspects you can have worked on. I think the young safeties, Brandon Stevens, Geno Stone, are going to get a little bit of time, as well as Broderick Washington in this game. So depending on what happens with the, Brandon Williams injury and some other injuries, it could be an interesting case for what this Ravens defense does. But Patrick Queen's also going to be looking to go make things right after a game where he misses three tackles. You want to see Malik Harrison snap too. Malik Harrison's going to get a lot of flack for what happened in the Chiefs game, but he has to cover Travis Kelce a couple times, which is not a fun matchup, especially for, a bigger thumping style linebacker to go try to cover one of the most lethal men in the NFL. So I think that, some of these younger players are going to get a chance to prove who deserves playing time and who can do something with the ball in their hands, who can go make a tackle. And I ultimately think that we see a pretty big day out of the Ravens special teams. Feels like Devin Duvernay's had a couple nice returns, especially on punts this year. And I think that we're going to see a big day out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of guys who could hopefully get involved and kind of spark something for later in the season. But finally, Spencer, is there a final score prediction you have this early in the week for this game? Is it something where it's going to be an absolute blowout for you, or do you think it might be a bit closer than anticipated?
I don't see the Lions offense able to consistently harm the Ravens defense, and I think the Ravens end up winning this one. Let's go by score in the 20s. Let's go 27, Lions 12 for a random number.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go 30-17. I think the Ravens offense will be able to put up some points, obviously, on that Lions defense, and vice versa. I think it'll be hard for the Lions offense to get a bunch of anything going against the Ravens defense, although they will have to perform a bit better than they have in the last two games. But the two offenses they've faced so far are, I think, a little bit better than the Detroit Lions offense right now. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Before I get you out of here, though, where can people find your work, both with Baltimore Beatdown and any other stuff that you have out there?
Yeah, you can find my work at BaltimoreBeatdown.com, as well as on Twitter at Ravens4Dummies. You can find me on YouTube, Spencer N. Schultz. I'm doing some DraftKings videos as well. I did a quick little 90-second video ahead of DraftKings. I'm releasing those on Sundays. Maybe I'll add some fantasy and some betting content as well. So you can find those. Do video breakdowns on YouTube there as well. And you can find all of our podcast work, writing, everything Baltimore Beatdown. Search Baltimore Beatdown anywhere you want to look. You'll be able to find some of my work. So thank you so much, Kevin. It was a huge win for the Ravens. A really exciting game. I know it's going to be a fun week kind of looking back at this one. But it's exciting to see the Ravens able to navigate themselves out of being 0-2 and catch that confidence and able to go make some things happen in a huge game and change the narrative that was so negative coming out of week one.
Yeah, it certainly was negative. And Spencer, thank you so much for coming on the show once again. And be sure to check out Spencer's work. It'll all be in the description down below, his Twitter and the Baltimore Beatdown podcast, of course, and more. But that's all that I have for you today here on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.